This episode is brought to you by Fresh Clean Tees. It's like a shave club, but they offer the most awesome t-shirts you'll ever wear. Seriously, they look amazing and feel even better. To save 20% off your first shipment, go to freshcleantees.com and enter the coupon code GFQ20 at checkout. That's GFQ20. What's the tag? Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
I started
How
the wrong
are you,
show.
Andrew?
I started the wrong show.
Yep.
I started doing Mat-Man before this, and I said, here's my co-host, Rich the Hammerhead Stambolian. And you are not Rich Stambolian. Yep. Nope.
Paul the Iron Sheik
Paul Theroux. The Iron Sheik Theroux. Oh, man, what a day, Paul.
I know.
Are in the middle of trying to figure out what's going on with Skype, okay?
Yep.
I sent Paul...
I spent way too much time on this today.
I did, too.
Which is, you know, typical.
Yeah. So, over the weekend, I corrected the Skype issue we were having with our return video. We like to send HD video to our guests. If you're on the show, we want to send you HD video. And we had corrected this problem. I don't know what happened. Where my problem is now is resolved. Paul's problem has come back, and I sent Paul a webcam over the weekend. I said, you know, let me send you a camera. Let's see, maybe let's determine if it's your webcam. That's the problem. And apparently it is not the problem. I did a Skype update this morning, and now we cannot send each other HD video.
Which is fine, in a way.
In a way, because it corrected the problem, right? You're no longer freezing. So as long as you're not freezing, that's fine. We could deal with this.
It's almost like a workaround.
It kind of is a work. It's a bug workaround, right? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's like when they, by mistake, find out that a drug has this like side effect that's actually a positive. Like with Propecia, when they discovered that it was a prostate medication and it actually growed, you know, hair. So now it's a hair drug. So it happens every now and then. Like Viagra. There you go. We have a lot to talk about today. Before we go into what we're going to talk about, I want to remind everybody... Paul and Mary Jo and myself will be live in New York City tomorrow at the Microsoft Store on Fifth Avenue at 2 p.m. Windows Weekly will be recorded live at 2 p.m. from the Microsoft Store, and it's going to be from 2 to 4. And following the show, everyone is going to Rattle and Hum West for a lot of tomfoolery.
Right. You're right.
He was a television host in the 1970s. Tomfoolery.
Sure.
So if you want to come by, definitely come by. Check the show out. We're going to be recording it live. I'm going to be helping out with some of the production. I have Chris Tobin coming and hanging out. He's going to be helping out. My brother, which is doesn't really know much about this stuff, he's going to be coming and helping out. So I can blame him for all the problems that we're having.
Sure.
So it should be a lot of fun. I'm curious as to how many people are going to actually show up, because last time it was tremendous. It was way more than I had anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to know because we don't really have a sign-up thing or whatever. But also, you know, it's during the day, on a work day, too. I mean, it's amazing anyone can go to these things. But, yeah, we'll see. But it should be better at the Rattling Hum thing later, too.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. So check it out. It's at from 2 to 4 at the Microsoft Store on Fifth Avenue here in New York City. Come by, meet Paul. He'll sign you. He'll personally sign you. If you want, I'm bringing a marker.
So Sharpie.
If you want, he could draw the Theroux logo on your forehead, and you could just hang around. Please don't do that, guys. Today's show is brought to you by Fresh Clean Tees, guys. I'm not wearing a Fresh Clean Tee today. Well, actually, this is clean, but it is not a Fresh Clean Tee because I've been wearing these things so much, almost every day. I just wash them and I wear them because they are my favorite T-shirts to wear at this point. It is ridiculous how comfortable these things are. How wonderful they are. I'm a t-shirt and jeans guy, and you rarely will see me in a suit, and when you do, you know it's a funeral or a wedding. That's the only time that I'll be wearing a suit. But, you know, going around town, I'm always wearing t-shirt and jeans. So something like this is phenomenal for me. So let me explain to you what this is. It's like a shave club, but they offer the most awesome t-shirts you're ever going to wear. Seriously, they feel great. It's very high-quality cotton. It's a very high-quality t-shirt, and they're giving you guys a great promo right now. If you go to freshcleantees.com and you use the coupon code GFQ20 at checkout, that's GFQ20 at checkout, You get 20% off your first shipment. So what do they offer? I'm going to pull up the website right here. So this is how it works. So you could join. Where's this join here? And you could you have an option of doing either a monthly delivery, a bi-monthly, or a quarterly delivery. And you pick out the shirts. You pick out the colors. You pick out the quality, the style, V-neck, crew-neck, whatever it is. And you go through it and you set up. So you got the monthly package for $36. You got the bi-monthly for $39. You know, if you wear a lot of t-shirts, you guys know how difficult it is to keep this thing looking good. After a couple washes, after, you know, if you have your favorite t-shirt, it starts falling apart after a while. Why not get a fresh t-shirt delivered every month to your door where you could just, you know, you wear them and you look great? FreshCleanTees.com. Use coupon code GFQ20 at checkout and get 20% off your purchase. That's GFQ20. This is actually awesome. So they have they offer options like Shades of Gray, which is a shipment of black, white, and gray t-shirts, or Wild Style, which is Paul's favorite pick, the Wild Style, which varies in quality in colors. They also offer all black or all black options, all white or all black options. Plus the Color Me Bad, which features one black, one white, and a different color shirt with each shipment. I'm going to go with all black t-shirts. I'm like Johnny Bravo, the cartoon. Literally, my entire closet is just black crewnecks just hanging up. That's all I have. FreshCleanTees.com. Use the coupon code GFQ20 at checkout to get 20% off your purchase. I want to thank Fresh Clean Tees for supporting the show, for, of course, supporting the GFQ network. So, Paul, are you excited about your trip tomorrow?
Excited is a strong word. I'm stealing for it, I guess. Yeah, sure.
There's a lot to talk about. You know, a lot is happening right now, and I say that every week. And a story that came up this week, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, if this is a good idea or a bad idea. It seems like this is the big story this week. Google possibly is building their own phone, much like how Microsoft is not building a Surface phone. comparatively to Apple, to kind of get into that market. Do you think this is a positive for them? I mean, right now they've relied on companies like Huawei and LG, and in the past, you know, almost everybody to create their Nexus devices. There's not too much information about this, but we could look at this and kind of see if this is a positive for Google.
Yep. You know, it's funny. It's kind of a matter of timing. I wrote a little bit about this. I have some advice for Google if they are doing this. But as far as whether it's a good idea or not, I think the thing you have to look at is, you know, what does the ecosystem look like? How is the Nexus thing working out for them? How would them releasing their own phone change things? And, you know, if we had had this discussion a year ago, I would have said, man, it's time for them to do this. The Nexus phones are terrible. Well, the Nexus devices are terrible. Remember a year ago, they had the giant Motorola Nexus 6, which was terrible. They had the Nexus 9 tablet, terrible. And the thing that was really kind of sad about those two devices is that they replaced smaller devices, both of which were at the time superior. You know, the original Nexus 5 smartphone, which I still have. In fact, that's over there now. But it's an almost perfect little phone.
It was a great phone, yeah.
And then the Nexus 7 tablet, which was a classic of both generations. Possibly the only two good Android tablets ever made.
The Nexus 5 was made by who? LG?
LG.
Yeah, so I think it was similar to this, right? It was like the LG G2, the Nexus 5.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, 5-inch screen. It's just a great little phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, the thing that's changed, though, over the past year is that they got Nexus right for the most part. This past year. So the Nexus 5X and Nexus 6P are, in my mind, superior phones in those classes, right? Kind of a mid-range standard size phone in the Nexus 5X and then a phablet type phone in the 6P. 6P is the one that I have, although I bought both of them. They don't really have a totally viable tablet anymore. The Pixel C is obviously their tablet now. They got rid of the Nexus 9 finally. But as far as phones go, I mean, you know, What would a Google designed and branded phone kind of bring to the table? And it's kind of hard to answer that question because they have increased their role in the design of the Nexus devices. I think they've reached a level of quality, especially with the 6P, where you can put that thing up against an iPhone and say, look, I mean, these things are of equivalent quality. You know, they're really both nicely made. And so I don't know. I mean, the one little clue I saw in the report that claimed that they were doing this was that Google was talking to wireless carriers, and I think that's how the author had found out about it. And so that would be a difference because the Nexus phones only go through.
Yeah.
Or only sold through, you know, Google's website.
I'm also curious if this would be a way for Google to kind of leverage updates on Android, you know, within the carrier. Because right now...
Right.
You know, the Nexus devices are, yeah, you could get the updates on the Nexus devices, but it's still not too many people have a Nexus device. These are not, you know, major players in the smartphone market. Yeah. It's for more of the enthusiast and a person that kind of knows how it works. And you can buy it outright, you know, through through Google's website. But
By the way, you have to buy it outright. Maybe that's part of the problem, too. You can get a Google Fi subscription and get them that way, but mostly you buy them outright.
You can actually pay
monthly on a Fi subscription if you want to do that.
Yeah, but they're not on Verizon, right? That's also an issue.
They do work on Verizon.
Do they?
Yeah, the Universal.
Huh.
Yep.
Are we sure about that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mary Jo uses it on Verizon.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious as to how they're going to get in the store, you know?
Well, that's the thing. Talking to carriers, clearly they have a plan for that. I just don't quite... So there's a couple things here. You know, my advice to Google was to avoid what I think of as the Surface curse, right? You don't want to make your partners upset. You have hardware partners, some of whom are very powerful, like Samsung in particular, that are selling, in many cases, great devices out in the market in various ways, right? Mostly through wireless carriers. You know, why would you want to rock that boat? But the other issue is what's going on in Europe right now, not with the Brexit thing, but
we were taking a different turn to this.
Yeah. Brexit to the Britannining or whatever. It's not that. It's more along the lines of the EU and their antitrust investigations into Google, and in particular into Android. And so one of the investigations they have is about these licensing agreements they have with their partners. And one of the big possibilities in Europe right now is that they could force Google to stop enforcing licenses that require their partners to promote and make the default various Google's apps and services, right? And so if you want the Play Store, if you want the full Google Android experience, you actually have to, you know, Gmail is the default email, Chrome is the default web browser. That's how these things have to go out the gate. So if the EU actually prevents them from doing that, you could almost understand why Google would be investigating their own phones, because that would be a way, and would be doing it with carriers, because that would be a way for them to get the full Google experience out into the world in meaningful numbers at a time when their partners would very quickly move to change that, right? Some of them would, right? Samsung in particular, you have to think, the world's biggest smartphone maker, would start making their stuff the default.
So he has a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the iPhone is, you know, the phone, right? That's the phone right now. I know that Android has market share, but the phone is the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Does the name and does the quality Google have the ability to kind of take over that and become the number one, you know, the number two smartphone immediately, you know, from the beginning? You know, Google kind of markets this and pushes this, and because there's a lot of confusion over the brand. We know that it's Google, but people don't understand what Android is, and Samsung is also Android, and there's a lot of it's a web more than anything else.
You don't think Google has the same name as Apple, do you? I mean, not in phones, right? I think that, you know, I really do think the Surface example is a tough one for them, because really the business they're going to be taking away from is their partners' businesses, right? And I guess Google might be able to argue, actually probably not, but might argue that, look, you know, if the market grows to a certain percentage, we're not taking business away from anybody because it's all going to be additive. But the truth is the smartphone market has kind of slowed down, and I don't think they're going to be experiencing very major growth. And so ultimately, if Google is successful making their own phones, they're going to be taking business.
Yeah, because
I keep saying Google, and my phone thinks I'm talking to it.
do you think so? When you talk about the build quality and stuff, when you hold an iPhone, do you think that the 6P or the 5S, 5X? They're at the same quality as, you know,
the 6P is, because from a hardware perspective It's an all-metal design. It's a beautiful device. It's really well made. The 5X is basically the same internals. It has a slightly slower processor. But the rest of it's basically the same, including the camera. The difference from a form... Hello?
Yes. Hi.
From a form factor perspective is that it's a plastic case, you know, yeah. And they just did that to help keep it, you know, lower cost or whatever. Yeah. So it's, you know, I don't think a lot of, if you were holding an iPhone 6S and a Google Nexus 5X side by side, you might say, well, you know, the plastic one seems a little cheaper, but it's not cheap. I found the build quality to be very nice, but.
On the 5X. Yeah. I know, like my Samsung, this is a beautifully designed phone, you know, mm-hmm. The quality of the phone is tremendous. And I know that that is the only reason why people are buying this phone. There's just really no...
Well,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, I mean, people walk into the store. You know what's actually shocking to me? That seems to be a major make or break for Android users now is water resistance.
Yeah.
I never even considered that to be, like, an important thing for me. I guess it's important, right? I mean, why wouldn't you want it to be water resistant if... You know, you right. have a phone. If you have the option, who wouldn't take it? But I didn't know that that was like a big deal for a lot of users. And it seems like with a lot of this iPhone rumbling and a lot of this other manufacturers, you know, you see the stories and go, well, it's a great phone, but it's not water resistant. And I don't know. Is that a thing? Is that a deal for you? Like a big deal for you to have?
Apparently. I mean, to me, it seems like the type of thing that would happen when you figured out all the important stuff, right? I mean... you know, a smartphone is something you have with you all the time. I suppose you could be in the rain. Obviously, people drop them in toilets. I've certainly done that at least once in my life. Sinks, you know, whatever. Yeah. One time I had one in a hotel or whatever, and listening to a podcast or something, and it slid into the sink while I was shaving.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff happens. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously, that's kind of a nice thing. I don't look at it as a top 3 or 5 feature or whatever, but...
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
So why... Obviously, is Google... Now, with the story, is Google going to be manufacturing the phones themselves? Or are they going to hire a company and just not have, like, a branded phone? Like, just, it could be a Huawei, and they're just going to take the branding off and just call it a Google phone.
Well, remember that there are stages here. And even the Nexus program has changed a little bit. I think a lot of people forget this, but 1 year... You know, 3-4 years ago, there was a Galaxy Nexus phone, right? And it was the Samsung whatever S3, whatever it was new that year, done in Nexus form, meaning that when you bought it through the Google store at the time, whatever that was called, you got like the clean Google image on it. And so it was a way to get the Samsung phone, but with the, you know, the clean Android image. So if Google were to make its own phones, and then maybe they called it like a Google Pixel. You know, whatever the name might be, if Pixel suddenly becomes the brand that they use for any of their in-house devices, obviously that's going to be manufactured by some company. Like Google doesn't have manufacturing capabilities, but it doesn't mean they have to get rid of these partner Nexus phones, right? Because those are two different things in a way. I sort of like the variety of the Nexus stuff, and it's sort of analogous. It's not a perfect comparison, but it's sort of like the signature PC program that Microsoft has at the Microsoft Store, right? Where you could buy an HP Stream 11 or, you know, a Dell XPS 13 or whatever the device is from those companies. You could buy them from Best Buy. But when you buy them from Microsoft directly, or from Microsoft, I guess it's not really directly, but when you get them from Microsoft, you get that clean image on it, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe the Nexus program could change into, and maybe this is something they could throw as a bone to their partners, into what that Galaxy Nexus was a few years ago. In other words, if the 6P came out today, Huawei could come out with their version of it, the Huawei, whatever they called it.
And it would
and
be,
they could sell it however they wanted to.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess it's reverse what they're doing now. It's the opposite of the Google Experience phones.
If they wanted to. I mean, you know, who knows? Huawei may choose to do the clean experience. I'm sure that's what Google wants, but we can only speculate.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that they're getting into this, and there's something. I'm sure it's a lot bigger than we understand right now because of the lack of information that's out there. But the fact that they want to compete as Google phones, You know what? You want me to predict something? I am going to predict that there will not be the word Android anywhere in their marketing.
That's interesting. Like, in other words, they're selling what is essentially a Google experience.
A Google operating system, a Google OS, a Google whatever experience, whatever.
I guess if you were going to do that, why even say OS, right? You just say Google.
Just say the Google phone. Yeah, the Google phone.
Yeah.
The Google whatever. You could call it whatever you wanted to call it because I talk to people
I just
about
think they got to be careful with this. Yeah. This could blow up in their face.
Well, that's why, right? Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out for marketing reasons how not to piss off the OEMs. But the reality is, where are they going to go? If they're upset,
you know what, though? Your savior can arrive in ways that may surprise people today. So, for example, we know that when Microsoft released the Surface, every single major PC maker on Earth started selling Chromebooks, right? And at first, you know, it seems like a little bit of a joke, right? Chromebooks are pathetic. They don't work offline, supposedly. They're really limited. It's just a web browser. And then this year happens, and we're about, you know, 3 years into this or whatever. Well, guess what? Chromebooks can run Android apps now. All of a sudden, that's a really viable operating system.
Yeah.
Things change, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that, you know, Windows Phone's making a comeback or this is like an opening for BlackBerry or whatever, but... You know, Samsung's got their own OS.
Please tell me Samsung, it's an opening for BlackBerry.
Yeah. See, finally, their master plan is laid bare. This is the moment they've been waiting
for. They played possum for 7 years.
Yeah, exactly. It was a calculated risk. There are people in the world who want to believe those types of strategies exist. When, in fact, these companies just stumble into the grave without even knowing what's happening. But, you know, there's a potential opening. I mean, Samsung has been testing the waters at first with, what's it called, Tizen or whatever
Tizen,
that thing
yeah.
is that they have.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But you know what? It's kind of growing up a little bit, too. And like Chromebook or Chrome OS, I mean, you never know. And Samsung's powerful enough to make this happen. Samsung is powerful enough at least to wrest control of Android away from Google in some ways, right? Samsung could really screw around with Android and has a big enough kind of app development, you know, ecosystem of their own that they could, just create a bunch of apps and have that stuff have better integration with Tizen wearables.
Well, I'll tell you, Tizen are in fact working
on that stuff right now.
I have a Tizen wearable and it's very limited because it's very limited. The operating system is very limited and you don't have, you know, it doesn't run applications on its own. It has a companion apps. Right. But if they could market this thing properly, I don't think people realize that it's not Android. I think people are buying these things, you know, and they're using them and they don't realize it's not Android. The fact of the matter is, it's open source also, right? Tizen is open source. So, essentially, it could run Android applications because it's Linux.
Yeah.
You're right. Yep. I don't know. Maybe I honestly think Samsung's big plan is to abandon Android and go to Tizen.
I do, too. But, like, you know, the conditions have to be right. Although, from Samsung's perspective, if Google was to lose control over what they can require their licensees to do with Android, it may not make sense at that point to bother. I mean, Android is already a mature operating system, billion plus apps, whatever it is, billion point five users. It's a known quantity. I mean, people like it. They want it. They'd be kind of stupid to go to it right now, but they do have this thing in their back pocket.
Yeah. I believe it does run Android apps. Let me see here. I'm reading this here. Fundamentally, it should be able to run Android apps. So, yeah, if Samsung could tap into the Galaxy Store, right? That's what they call it. You have all these applications in there. Of course, it's called the Galaxy Store. So you have your TVs, your wearables, your phones, your tablets, all on Tizen. Mm-hmm. Now you have a competitor on the market because people have been buying Samsung phones for a very, very long time. Yeah, listen, it's a major, major risk. I don't know if they'll ever take it, but it is something I'm sure they're considering for the long haul.
Right. And plotting, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very interesting to me. And Microsoft, on the other hand, when is that Surface phone coming, Paul?
Well, if they release it, it won't be until the early part of 2017.
Is there any news on that? I mean, just anything?
They're definitely working on it.
Yeah.
I'll give you something. You know, it's funny. I when HP announced their Elite X3, which is their upcoming business-focused Windows Phone phablet, right, that contorts into a laptop or whatever with a dock and uses Continuum and all that, I thought, you know, this is a device that is basically what we thought Surface Phone would be. And so now that HP's making it, how will Surface differentiate themselves, you know? Like, what would a Surface Phone look like that would be any different from what this HP thing is? But actually, I'm starting to wonder if I don't have this backwards, right? That when you think about Microsoft just canceled the Surface 3, or announced they're canceling it, there's no Surface 4 in sight. And so maybe the Surface Phone is the thing that replaces the Surface 3, right? Maybe it's, you know, think about the way they do Surface. Surface is a kind of a market-defining product line. It's their aspirational devices. With the Surface Pro now, they're allowing all of their OEM PC maker partners to basically copy the design and use it in their own products and kind of expand on it as well. And so if you take like a Surface Pro 4 and you say, well, here's this device, how might you make it your own? And so they have unique kickstand, you know, designs in some cases. Some of them, you know, only use, you know, Core processors or whatever the difference is.
Yeah, different hinges, yeah.
Different keyboards, yeah. All kinds of stuff. But recognizable as a Surface Pro. You know, maybe they're reversing the order in which these things are released, but maybe that's what Surface Phone is to the Elite X3. Maybe the Surface Phone is an Elite X3, but made by Microsoft with, you know, Surface look and feel, some form of transforming capability, so it's a 2-in-1 that will be like a computer when docked to a like a tablet form factor or a laptop form factor, whatever, however they decide to do it. I mean, maybe we're really just seeing what's going to happen in advance because, you know, HP's going to market first for whatever reason. Maybe there is no surprise, right? Other than that the Surface Phone or whatever they call it will simply be just like the Elite X3, but by Microsoft.
Yeah,
you know, maybe that's the point.
That may be a smart strategy by them because then, you know, it's not on them, right? It's HP that's doing the development of this device.
Well, you know, HP is going to do things their own way, right? HP is very much focused on businesses. Well, so is Microsoft. You know, Microsoft has made that pronouncement with Windows 10 Mobile already. We're going to focus on businesses. But, you know, Microsoft could sell this device through their own store. They could sell it directly to customers like they do now with the Lumia 950s. You know, obviously there are certain advantages for some people to kind of a Surface look and feel. It could have some unique features, a pen kind of thing, like a stylus compatibility. A lot of people seem to want, you know, like a Surface Pen. You know, a type cover type situation with a plug-in laptop or tablet kind of dock type thing. It could look like a Surface 3.
Yeah, I've always said that the advantage for a Surface device would have been a advanced Continuum. You know, Continuum's future would be the benefit of the Surface device. And, you know, Continuum is growing and it's changing and it's getting better, but yep. Something like that, in my opinion, I mean, look at that. You have Nook, right? You have the Nook. There, I mean, there's that Kangaroo PC, which is tiny. There's like all these, well, you know, what?
I was going to say, I mean, those are real PCs.
Yeah,
I mean,
but they're real PCs, yeah.
The one risk with the Surface Phone or with the Elite X3 is that it's an ARM device.
Yeah.
And so you're limited to the Universal Windows platform, which is truly limited. Although you get the basics. You get offices on there, obviously, and some other important apps. But you do lose stuff that you could use in the Surface 3. Photoshop, iTunes, Chrome, you know, that kind of thing.
But what I was going to say was, you know, the rumors about it being an Intel device made a lot of sense to me. And now that there's stories Intel canned the program.
Well, which, by the way, I think explains why it hasn't happened yet, right?
Yeah.
In other words, if the Intel stuff had come together, Microsoft probably would have shipped the Surface Phone as we expected it, Intel device. And then the follow-ons would have come later. In other words, in the same way that people copied Surface Pro 4, PC makers copied it, they would copy the Surface Phone because now it's a new kind of phone. It's really just a PC that can also be a phone, you know. It's a really exciting idea. Obviously, people have been trying this for years.
I don't know how many people would actually use it, but it is a very exciting idea, the fact that your phone is your PC, your PC is your phone, which technically we do everything on, you know, the PC, on the phone anyway. Might as well just dock the thing and have a PC with you wherever you're going.
The problem is, there, it's not, and this is not just Microsoft's problem, but The problem is there is no, I'm trying to think if there is. I mean, I don't think there's any one mobile platform where on the same device you could have apps that would make sense on both a phone screen and on a big like 27-inch screen at the same time and still have a viable ecosystem of apps. So yeah. Microsoft has done the technical work to make Continuum happen. It works. It's pretty good. But they lack the app library, and that's where it really falls apart. Android has a tremendous app library, but where those apps fall apart are on tablets. A lot of the Android tablet apps are pretty terrible. A lot of times all you get is a phone app that kind of stretches out. It looks stupid.
Majority of the iPad
stuff, that it might actually be the furthest along, which is a scary proposition, right, for Microsoft and Google.
Well, Apple TV seeing that as a problem also because some of these apps that are on there, major players, right? I'm talking about Jetpack Joyride, right, which is on every single platform known to man. On the Apple TV, it looks fine. It looks good. But there are a lot of things that you could tell that it was just ported over. Like when you use a controller, it doesn't go to the select areas. It wasn't made for that. It was just ported over.
Yeah, okay. But I'm not, I don't know if this like game is a good example. I mean, I'm talking about like Microsoft Word or something.
Okay,
I think the thing that's saving Apple from just taking this over right now is that the way Apple makes money is when you buy multiple devices. They don't want to sell you an iPhone. They want to sell you an iPhone. They want to sell you an iPod or an iPad, sorry. They want to sell you an Apple Watch. They want to sell you a Mac. Like that's you using a Microsoft Word on one device on multiple screens doesn't help Apple in the slightest. Well, it helps them a little if it's an Apple device. But what they really want is multi-device, right? So from Microsoft or Google's perspective, you using one device but sticking to their services and software is excellent. That's how they win.
Yeah.
So my Apple, it's weird. Like they actually could make this happen right now, and I bet they don't because it's just not their strategy.
So what you're saying is that the iPhone is your gateway to a harder hit to your wallet. It's like the marijuana of technology. It's a gateway
it's
drug.
It's the crack
call.
Cocaine of mobility.
I went into the store and I bought an iPhone. I didn't think I would ever get a Mac, but now I'm all Mac'd out. I have Apple everything.
Okay.
Well, I actually went backwards, actually. Sure. I started off with a Mac, and I'm refusing to go to an iPhone.
But here's
an example. Think of what market share for PC sales would be if there is an Intel-based Surface phone.
Right.
And every 2 years, guess what? You're going in and giving this thing in, and you're getting a new PC, essentially.
Yeah.
You have a new PC every 2 to 3 years. Look at think of the market share. You're going to see, it's all going to be, I guess they're real numbers, but you're going to see PC sales go sky high through the roof.
Well,
if they sell a lot.
I mean, I think we've had this discussion before, but even on an ARM-based device, if you're HP and you're selling it's exclusively to businesses. You're selling it as part of a support contract that has enterprise data center services that are going to deliver desktop apps down to your phone and on and on and on. You know, they don't really have to sell millions of those things for that to make sense. I mean, I think we had this conversation, right? Like the top five PC models of 2015. I mean, how many units did they sell? Probably one or two of them sold a million plus, but the rest of them were all tens or hundreds of thousands of units each. It has to be like that. There are so many PC models, and we know they only sell 70 to 85 million a month or a quarter or whatever. So even, you know, when you think about that market, even an ARM-based phone just sold to businesses is easily going to sell into tens of thousands, if not the hundreds of thousands of units. It actually will be or could certainly be successful.
Absolutely.
In that context, right?
Absolutely.
Not next to the iPhone. You can't compare it to the iPhone. iPhone sells whatever that is, 75 million units a quarter.
It's actually a zillion iPhones a quarter, Paul.
A zillion, a kajillion, or whatever it is. So they're not competing. You know, it's easy to declare victory when you change the rules, I guess, or whatever. And there's no way to frame this other than they're scaling down. But for HP, for Microsoft, for other companies perhaps, because I think we're going to see other phones like this. This is, you know, I mean, how many elite X2 Surface clones does HP sell? How many Stream 11s did they ever sell? You know, I mean, how many? I don't know.
I have no idea.
But are you saying, are we going to suggest that they can't do that with this phone that is also a PC? That's being sold as part of a total package to manage enterprises? I see the possibility. That's all. In them, you know, in that limited market.
So, Paul.
Yes.
I want to get your opinion. So I've been trying to talk about this for like 4 weeks now.
Okay.
Or 3 weeks now. And every time I put it on the notes, I totally forget to bring this up. Actually, two and a half weeks. Almost 3 weeks. Okay. You have an HP Spectre 13-inch, right?
Yeah, what's it called? You're wondering.
Yeah, what is it called? So,
it's like the 13th computer to bear the name Spectre 13. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's a HP Spectre. It's the 13T, technically. Okay. It's got some awful model number. Yes.
I want to know more about this because I'm very impressed by this. By just a look. I mean, it's a very pretty computer. It's a very pretty laptop. And, you know, when we talk about competing with Apple... We know that that is the only thing that matters.
All right, so when you see me tomorrow,
yeah.
If I don't have this computer with me, something has gone horribly wrong.
Okay,
but
you love it.
My plan is to bring it to New York because I need to test battery life and stuff like that. But it's an intriguing device. I mean...
By the way, you guys can follow along on Therat.com if you go. And you can just search for HP Spectre first impressions.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, how do you even find this thing? It's a beautiful machine. It's a polarizing machine in some ways, right? It's got these shiny chrome pieces that you will either love or hate, depending on your aesthetic leaning, I guess. I find it attractive. It's not my kind of thing per se, but there are thoughtful design touches all over this computer, including the speaker grill that you're now showing, which is kind of poked out of the CNC, the machine. And also that hinge that you can see there as well, which is like a really nice piece of jewelry or furniture or something. Like, it's got a really neat, it's a kind of a recessed hinge effect. It helps keep the thinness down. So I don't know who comes up with these things. It's almost like making a computer on a dare. But I guess,
Is it like the concept car models that you saw in like the 60s, you know?
In other words... You look at something like the new MacBook, which is a Core M design. It's super thin. It has one USB-C port. It's got no keyboard travel because it's so thin. The touchpad literally doesn't move because it's so thin, and there's battery underneath it. And so they have to fake travel on the trackpad using haptic feedback.
Wow.
These are all the compromises that Apple had to make this thing, which at the time was probably the world's thinnest laptop. So HP looked at that and they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a laptop that's even thinner than that. It's going to have a bigger screen, 13 inches, not 12. It's going to have three USB-C ports. It's going to have full Intel Core i5 and i7 processors, not these stripped-down Core M baloney things that Apple puts in. And
it's actually beautiful.
How do we do that? You know, how do we do that, right? And so by definition, this thing has... compromises of its own as well, right? For it to achieve this thinness and still be, you know, durable and whatever with the Gorilla Glass, it doesn't have touch because adding the touch layer to the screen would have added that much more thickness to it.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. I am too, although I have to say, having used touch so much on Sony machines, I find myself touching the screen.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
That's a screen that doesn't have touch. It stinks. And so the MacBook doesn't have touch either. Yeah. Okay,
I guess
whatever.
If you never had it, you're never going to miss it.
They did some unique stuff with the battery. Oh, I should say full travel, basically full travel in the keyboard.
That's what I was going to ask you because it looks like it's short when I look at the picture.
So, but actually the keyboard feel is fantastic. It's really, really good.
So, I mean, it looks, that's actually really, considering it's full travel, that's actually impressively done.
I don't remember the exact numbers, but if full travel is 1.5 millimeters, and I think it is something like that, these are 1.3. It's very, very close. I think it's great. And I've used some thin and light laptops, including, by the way, an HP that came out in the past 6 or 9 months or whatever, where you almost feel like you're kind of hitting the bottom of the computer as you type. You can actually feel it clunking down in there. This has a better feel than that. They did a nice job with that. It has a full HD screen, so 1920 by probably 1080, not some QHD, whatever, super, super, super high res. Again, because of the size, you know, the thickness and all that, the types of screens you can do for that. You know, this is the kind of compromise. I actually think full HD on a screen of size is perfectly acceptable. It's not like a MacBook Air that only has a 1600 by 900, 1440 by 900, whatever the res is on that thing. Expandability options are fantastic. Two of those ports are full Thunderbolt. You can do all kinds of, you can have two external 4K, well, I should say 4K, I'm not actually positive, but two external displays. They have a docking system they sell for it. Apple has no such thing. Okay. So it's interesting. It doesn't quite get the same battery life rated. I have not tested this myself as the MacBook. So it's probably an hour, maybe an hour and a half short of the MacBook, something like that. But again, much more powerful. It's even thinner. It's super light. Has a bigger screen. Real processor, lots of RAM. I think all of them come with 8 gigs of RAM, 128 to probably 512 gigs of PCIe, by the way, SSD storage. You know, so it's a real PC, like it's a powerful PC, but it's in this kind of beautiful, thin, supermodel kind of package. And it's going to appeal to a certain group of people, you know. It's not super expensive. It's less expensive than a MacBook. It starts at $1,149 off the top of my head. I think it's all right. Yeah, and you can, you know, add to the storage. It goes up by 100 to 200 bucks from there.
It's an interesting
proposition.
Yeah, it's a beautiful machine. The hinge is something interesting. I don't know if I like it or if I love it. You know what I mean? It's one of those. Like, the design is very unique. But the fact that this thing is so thin. So how does it work with the fan on this thing?
That's the thing. So the first time I set this up, you know, you kind of open it up and you start installing apps and, you know, the fan kicks in. And they have you can see the fan grills. It's kind of interesting the way they do this. I can never figure out those kind of things. One of these is fake. They just put the second one in to, make it look
out.
Symmetrical.
Yeah.
But really, they call it a hyperbaric cooling system, which I assume has nothing to do with the Elephant Man, but basically is a way to pull air over the processor and then channel it out so that the fan blows it out. And so, again, within the confines of a machine is thin, you can't have a heat sink on top of the processor like you'd want to have, or a fan or whatever. And so they have to figure out a way to blow air over the processor without actually having all that stuff sitting on top of it. And so far, you know, again, I need to use it more real world. I use it out on the couch in front of the TV, install apps on it. The fan will blow for a little while. It kind of calms down.
Do you know what the resting temperature would be on it?
No, I don't know. I'm sorry. Like on your lap?
Yeah, like I have I have a thing installed on my Mac where I could see like the sensors and stuff, like the hard drive, the CPU usage. Yeah. So right now my Mac, I have the video playing and I'm at 111 Fahrenheit.
And actually real high, isn't it?
But the CPU's not spinning. The fan is not spinning at all. It's not even on. So it's at 111. So the threshold is a little higher on this thing, but my room is also, 90 degrees, so that comes into play right now. It's actually not that bad for a laptop, 111 degrees. So I'm curious on what it would be on that with a fan, because it's so thin. It's a beautiful laptop.
It is.
You know what I always wonder? This is a flagship, right? This is HP's flagship, I guess, one of them.
I mean, sure.
I have no idea. Like, if I went to HP's website, I don't know where to start looking. Like, there's so much to choose from. Like, I wish they did, like, the Apple thing where they would kind of organize everything and tell you, like this is the Pro model is this, and this model is this, and this model is this, and okay, you don't need 5,000 different options. I kind of want to be told what to buy from them. That's my issue with the
they almost have too many brands.
Yeah.
Or too many models, certainly. And of course, some of their models have terrible names. They have that kind of thing.
So I'm guessing the HP Elite is the MacBook Pro, right? That's their MacBook Pro version. I'm on HP's website right now. I mean, it looks like a MacBook Pro to me.
Two premium brands. Elite. Am I getting this right?
Yeah.
Spectre and Elite.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Elite Books and so forth. There's also, they have the gaming Omen devices, which they finally consolidated down to one brand on.
What's their gaming division?
Omen.
Omen, okay. And there's the Pavilion version. which is like their...
Well, Pavilion's just this is regular.
Yeah.
I have a hard time actually figuring out all the different stuff that they have.
Well, Lenovo's is even worse. Lenovo's website.
Yeah, Lenovo's bad too. Yeah. I think we've had this conversation maybe. PC makers are going down the car route, right? You see this with like BMW and Mercedes. Like, it used to be really obvious. BMW had like a 3 Series, 5 Series, and 7 Series. Mercedes had like a C Class, an E Class, and an S Class. Simple. And if you go look at their websites now, those two companies have, I think, about 117 different types of vehicles.
Every
now.
Number and every letter crazy. In the alphabet. And yeah.
It's absolutely insane trying to figure it out. HP's kind of doing this too. And by the way, part of the reason is the PC market is falling overall in size, right? It's getting smaller. But there are parts of the market that are growing. And those two parts of the market we just discussed, premium PCs, that is up. Again, thanks in part to service and gaming PCs as well. And so, look, there's HP doing exactly what we just described. And so I guess it makes some sense that they have multiple types of devices. But if you look at like HP's premium device page, there's like this family of stuff up there. And they all have different kinds of brands. This is the Spectre we've been talking about. There's the Elite X2, which is their Surface Pro clone. I'm just scrolling down to see what's in here. Envy. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the Envy.
X360, which is a great device.
So it's Spectre It's the Spectre laptop.
Spectre Envy.
Spectre 360.
Elite.
Envy. Envy 360. Elite Book Folio. Elite X3. Elite X2. This is their premium model.
So Spectre, Envy, Elite, right? Yeah. And how do those relate to each other? How does one determine which family of products go? You know, they have X360 devices, which are there, you know, where the screen goes all the way around. There's a Spectre, there's an Envy. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of hard sometimes to figure out what's what.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
the Elite
that's
Book,
that's
HP Elite Book 1030, that's their new device. That's like their regular laptop. The Elite Book 1030.
Yeah,
this is pretty much a MacBook. Essentially.
Yeah. It has I mean, there are differences. But yes.
Very interesting. I don't know. See, this is the problem. I really like that device, but I don't know anybody with one. Do you know anybody with one? A Spectre?
Well, it just came out. I mean,
yeah, but like even like the Elite books and stuff. Like, I think in the PC market, it's so confusing on what to buy. I don't know what like. There's no one major one that everybody's buying. You know.
So. Historically, the premium, especially business class laptop, was the ThinkPads, right? ThinkPad, that market's grown as well. They used to have, I'm going to get this slightly wrong, it's changed, so it doesn't really matter. But they had like R series, G series, T series, you know, whatever. If you look at their site now, just ThinkPads, it's crazy how many renditions of different machines and
it's all the same.
It really is like BMWs. There's crossover versions that are like the transforming PCs and 2-in-1. It's very strange, but. I would say right now in the premium PC space, not counting Apple on the PC side, it's really ThinkPad and it's HP, right? And they've made a very credible case over the past year, especially HP has, that it makes it a little hard to decide, right? Everyone else has kind of fallen by the wayside, even though they all have premium devices. They just don't have this same family of high-quality devices. Dell doesn't have this. Samsung doesn't have this. Asus doesn't have it. Acer doesn't have it. It doesn't mean they don't all have some premium devices. Actually, most of the Samsung devices are very expensive, and they're decent. You know, they're nice devices, but I just feel like these two companies in particular have really gone for it. Yeah. And so they're gunning for each other, of course, but they're also gunning for Apple.
Here is the ThinkPad lineup. You ready for this? You have the T-Series, the legendary professional Windows laptop. You have the X-Series, which is the ultra-portable Windows productivity tool, the P-Series, the mobile workstation, the Yoga Series, the 2-in-1 business laptop, the E-Series, the stylish and affordable productivity. You have the L-Series, affordable all-purpose productivity. Then you have the ThinkPad 13, productivity and portable laptop, the ThinkPad 11 E-Series, the rugged student laptop, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the X series started 6 years ago-ish, 7 years ago. The original X300, it was at the time a very radical design, kind of what we think of as an ultrabook now, very thin and light for the day. But, you know, they've had, it's funny, like the T series before that was always kind of the classic thin, light, but durable machine. Their machines are kind of coming together. So they have something like a ThinkPad X1 Carbon, which is a fantastic, beautiful machine. But kind of the workhorse of the fleet, the T, you know, I think it's 450S or 550S, because S was the slim versions, right? So you have X, which are, you know, super portable light and everything, but you also have T, whatever, S, which is the thin, thin, you know, slim version of the T series.
The T series is the classic ThinkPad, right?
It is, but they're so close to each other now, it's kind of hard to decide which is which. And so between a ThinkPad X1 Carbon, a ThinkPad X1 Yoga, which is, you know, the transforming one, and then like a ThinkPad T, I get the number wrong, but I'm going to say 550S, I think is probably the newest one.
So I'm looking here.
Very, very close to each other.
The T460, T460P.
460, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, the T460S and the 560. There's no 560S.
There's no, okay, whatever the S is. So the S is very close. As you know, in other words, like the way you would differentiate these things as recently as a year ago is that a T series would have classic ports on it, like an Ethernet port and a VGA port, right? Okay. Because business users would expect these things and would need them. But also those ports, because of their thickness, kind of constrained how thin the device could be. So I think the T whatever 450 or whatever you said it was, the 450, 460S, whatever the thing is, probably does have an Ethernet port on it. But I can tell you what it doesn't have is a VGA port. And so when you start removing these big legacy ports, all of a sudden they get a lot thinner. And then that thing starts to look a lot like an X1 Carbon. And, you know, where do you draw the line? Like, which one do you pick?
I'm looking at it right now. It has...
They're pretty close. They're pretty close.
It has Ethernet. You're right. It has HDMI, USB. I can't see what else on that side. I mean, I get it. I get what they're doing. I want the big brick. I want the big brick ThinkPad. The old school IBM ThinkPad.
My issue is I like bigger screens, and so preferably like a 15-inch screen. 15-inch screens are hard to come by in the ultrabook space. HP sells an X360 with an Elite, I guess it's a Envy X360 with a 15-inch screen, but it's kind of thick because it's a big device. A ThinkPad, any of those ThinkPads we just talked about, a 14-inch screen, that's fantastic. That's not a bad size. The Surface Book has it's basically a 14-inch screen. It's probably listed as 13-point-something, but 14-inch screen. This HP Spectre, whatever it's called, Spectre, the new one, the copper and ash gray or whatever the color scheme is, is a 13-inch screen. And so for me, because I'm used to these bigger screens, like this seems a little small. It seems kind of cute. It's like a little – it's really just a regular-sized computer. There's nothing really that small about it. It's just thin and light.
I'm excited to get my hands on it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I want to play around this thing. Guys, tomorrow we are going to be, Paul and Mary Jo are going to be filming. We'll be broadcasting live from the Microsoft store on Fifth Avenue here in New York City. And it's going to be a live Windows Weekly on location. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be hopefully not screwing anything up. And I'm going to hopefully get you guys set up and the broadcast will be going good. Chris Tobin and I will be setting that up. And I want to encourage everybody to come by. And if you cannot make it for that, because I know a lot of people work. We're going to be drinking.
How dare you?
How dare you
work on a Wednesday?
How dare you work on a Wednesday? We're filming, guys. We're shooting. It's a classic film about a man and his laptop.
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to be at Rattle and Hum West. So do you have the address for Rattle and Hum West?
No, but I can probably make that happen pretty quickly.
Because I'm getting a lot of messages from people saying, hey, isn't the other Rattle and Hum on the west side as well?
So the Rattle and Hum we usually go to is on 31st.
West 31st.
This one's on 39th. So it's 306 West 39th.
Yeah. And the other one is?
Yeah, the main, not the Rattle and Hum we're going to this week, but the one we always go to is between
5th and Madison?
5th and Madison or Park or whatever.
Yeah.
Or 5th and Madison. 5th and
something.
Yeah. This one is over by Times Square.
Yeah. So it's 39th between 8th and 9th.
Yes.
Yeah. So actually,
West.
So I'm gonna walk it because it's actually very equal distance, right? Actually, the other one might be a little closer to Penn Station.
Penn Station. They're both very close. Actually, it's possible that Rattle and Hum West is in fact closer. They're both really close. They're both a straight shot. Yeah. It's that, but Rattle and Hum East is on the east side. It's 14 East 33rd. right? Because I a meeting I just went to, it's the dividing line is like Fifth Avenue probably, right?
Yeah.
Or Avenue of the Americas. Fifth Ave?
Fifth Avenue.
East and West? Is that the, yeah.
I believe so.
I think so. Fifth Ave is like way over on the east, but it's the middle for some reason for the numbers. Anyway, Rattle and Hum East is on the east side and Rattle and Hum West is on the west side.
I love that in New York, right? It's a 9-minute walk, right, from Penn Station mm-hmm. to Rattle and Hum West. 9-minute walk, okay? Nine minutes by car, 9 minutes by train.
Yep. Yep.
Okay? And, yeah, in what other universe is that accurate? You know?
I know. It is a
doesn't matter
place,
what
yeah.
you think. It's going to be 9 minutes, guys. There's no
9 minutes.
I mean, you could run and cut like maybe like a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
What the frick is this?
You could do that. Something broke.
I just got a weird notification. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're going to be there tomorrow.
So make sure. Rattle and Hum West.
Yes.
But before Rattle and Hum West, we're going to be the Microsoft store.
Yes.
Which is in that general area as well.
I'm going to be there around 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
I'm getting there at 10 a.m. to set up and make sure everything's working perfectly fine. So if you're going to come by... come by and say hello. I'll be losing
actually,
my mind.
The Microsoft store is nowhere near this stuff.
No, it's not.
It is, in fact, on Fifth Avenue. Of course it is, right? It's over by Macy's or whatever.
Yeah, it's nowhere near it.
It's nowhere near it.
Yeah, I have a lot of equipment I'm bringing with me. That's going to be fun. I'm going to be lugging around stuff.
I never factored the Microsoft store part of this into my day.
It's okay.
That's not very close at all, is it?
It's okay. People get there. Manhattan, you take the subway, you got, it's 1, 2, 3. Probably quicker than walking.
You're going to take one of those rickshaw things.
Yeah.
It was the worst $45 I've ever spent in my life.
Did you do it?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
In fact, the one I did it was the last time we were at the Microsoft store. I hopped in one of those things and took it down the Rattle and Hum.
Yeah.
You know?
Guys, if you're going to be in the area early, Chris Sobin and I will be setting up upstairs, so come and say hello. Stay tuned. If you're watching this live, we're going to be recording our bonus show right now, which I'll be yelling and screaming about Skype for about 5 minutes, but I promise it won't be the entire show. Go to Therot.com, all things Paul Therot. Check this out, guys. Where is it? I'm trying to pull this up. Look what happened here. I broke Therot.com. It's not even loading for me.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's not even loading. This fall, Therot Premium is coming. Become a Therot Alpha member forever. They have a great deal right now. If you sign up now, it's only $42. Becoming an alpha male. If you sign up right now, you get 35% off your first year subscription. Become a premium member now for only $42. Go sign up. A lot of great stuff. Him and Brad work extremely hard on this website, and you guys seriously do a tremendous, tremendous job. It's my first site that I go to every day. I wake up.
Me too.
I don't even say hello to my wife. I leave my kid crying, and I just go to Therot.com. That's how we do it. Guys, Therot.com, all things Paul Therot. Also, subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Almost everywhere I could think of. And we're also on YouTube, so you can subscribe to our YouTube page also there. Stay tuned. We're going to be doing our bonus show. If you want access to that bonus show, you could go to patreon.com/whatthetech, fund us there, and get access to it. It's fun. We do 15, 20 minutes a day, where 15, 20 minutes a week, actually, I should say, where we just talk about whatever. So it'll be fun. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Bye-bye.